Hi, this is Steve Ide, Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute and editor of PublicSectorInc.org. Today I'm going to be speaking with Peter Salins and Wendell Cox on the topic of local government as effective government. Peter Salins is also a Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute, as well as University Professor of Political Science at Stony Brook University and Director of its Graduate Program in Public Policy. A planner and architect by training, Peter's most recent book is The Smart Society, Strengthening America's Greatest Resource, Its People. Wendell Cox is the principal of Demographia, a public policy consultancy firm. He has done planning and transit advisory work across the nation and in several other countries. His public service includes 8 years on the Los Angeles County Transportation Commission and a term on the U.S. Congress's Amtrak Reform Council. Gentlemen, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to Public Sector Inc.
Pleasure to be with you.
All right, so Wendell, let me start things off with you. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has claimed that one reason for New York's high taxes is the fact that it has 10,500 local government entities, a figure which includes many special districts. Do you think in the U.S., broadly speaking, that we have too many local governments?
No, but let me take on Governor Cuomo right away. The 10,000 figure includes all sorts of organs within New York's, within town governments. They are not separate government agencies. New York does not have 10,000 governments. But the basic point is no, indeed. In fact, I've done a detailed research in five states, one of which was New York, and in every single one of them we found that taxation and spending tended to drop with on a per capita basis based upon population down to some pretty low levels, so that, in fact, the whole idea that bigger is better with respect to municipal or local government, I would argue, is just plain not true.
And Wendell, you've worked overseas. Do local governments elsewhere operate more or less efficiency in your view than in the U.S.?
Well, I think that's really hard to say. I can tell you, though, that my much more limited experience overseas is that I see virtually the same kind of thing going on in Canada and Australia, where I have looked. And that is, again, the larger municipal governments tend to spend more per capita than the smaller municipal governments on a standard basket of public services.
And is that as a result of competition between smaller governments, or what's the principle behind that?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, one of the things that goes on, you know, a lot of people really think that if we just consolidate a bunch of governments, we'll get more efficiency, which is a terrible mistake, because when you consolidate governments, costs tend to rise to the highest level in every category. But no, it has to do with the fact that if you're in a city of 8 million, which you're sitting in right now, what is the chance of you actually knowing your city councilman? I can tell you, in the town of 20,000 where I live, I know my city councilman. And if you're talking about a town of 5,000 people, you're certainly going to know them. So the basic point is in larger communities, special interests have far more control than in smaller communities. I mean, and this is a very important issue.
Peter, do you want to jump in on the larger is better question?
Well, yeah. I mean, I totally agree with what Wendell said, but I want to, you know, parse the issue in a slightly different way. We really have two things going on when we talk about the structure of government. We have the delivery of services, and we have the cost, and I mean the cost that gets translated into taxation. Two different issues and sort of two different answers. I totally agree with Wendell that large jurisdiction will result in larger, higher taxes, mainly because of the power of the public employee unions. The key to the cost of local government is the cost of the local government employees. And the larger the grouping of local government employees, the more leverage they have, and the higher their pay is going to be, and consequently the higher the taxation. But we also have the issue of the effectiveness of local government. And what I see is a certain mismatch there. We have in every metropolitan area, and I look at the natural unit, the natural economic and social unit of urbanization is the metropolitan area. And we really should start by looking in every American locale, and as well as in every European or Asian locale, look at the organic entity called the metropolitan area. Now, what we have done in America is we take somewhere between 40% and 60% of that whole entity, and we dump it in one jurisdiction, whether that jurisdiction is New York or L.A. or Chicago, and then we take the other anywhere from 40 to 60%, and we you know, devolve that into hundreds, in some cases thousands, of jurisdictions. To me, that doesn't seem like a particularly rational approach. I think the way to look at the delivery of government service is to say some things, mainly transportation, have to be done on a regional basis. And that's why we have something like the MTA. That some things can be done in large municipalities, and many, many, many local services should be done in very small municipalities. One of the big problems with New York is that it is way too big to do a good job of delivering ordinary municipal services. The other problem in a very large jurisdiction is large jurisdictions don't stick to their knitting. And I'm using a phrase that Steve himself used in a recent book review. New York City diverts a huge amount of the resources and energy that it could devote to better municipal services by trying to become a miniature social welfare state. That is a temptation that these large jurisdictions fall into, that small jurisdictions simply wouldn't be able to do. As far as I'm concerned, that social services should be delivered at a much larger scale, generally at the level of the state, and that localities should focus on municipal services. So we have both the phenomenon of too big in the center and probably, in many cases, too small at the periphery.
Wendell, do you want to follow up about that before we move on to the next
topic? I would certainly generally agree with Peter on that. The fact is that there is no one level or size of local government that is perfect for everything. And that's sort of the genius, I think, theoretically, of the American system, though, as Peter rightly points out, it doesn't work out too well in the way we've actually organized our governments. In what I entirely agree with him is the functional level that we should look at an urban area, which is the metropolitan area. But again, so that, for example, you'll have the MTA in New York. You might have in some communities you'll have a sewer district or a water district or whatever. At the same time, though, I have some concerns about the delivery of services even in those kinds of organizations, which admittedly are necessary at more of a regional level. But if, for example, you take a look at transit around the country, any measure of unit cost you want, the economies of scale are absolutely turned on their head. I mean, I can show you transit data, and I've seen other areas as well, where as the unit gets larger, the unit costs get larger. And I think what that does, and one of the real sort of failings, I think, of American public policy in recent years has been the failure to really develop a competitive system that brings in competition from the private sector, like Stephen Goldsmith used to talk about, to bring costs under control, because otherwise, you end up paying more than necessary. At the same time, I'd be the last to suggest that we break the MTA into pieces of an organization that are the size of municipalities.
Well, that gets into what Peter is saying, that some services seem to make more sense to fund at a, you know, regional or even state level. I mean, how responsible should local governments be for funding transit? What are you saying there?
Well, my own view is they ought to be completely responsible. That is, the region ought to be. I mean, one of the reasons why we have seen transit costs in this country go up three times relative to inflation, I mean, it's unbelievable. Healthcare has barely gone up as much on a unit cost basis as transit has. And it's not just New York. You can go to Denver. You can go to Los Angeles. You see the same thing. And so the basic point is that one of the big problems has been that there's too much free money around. I mean, I not only do I believe in local government, but I think local people ought to pay for local government services, and the money shouldn't be coming from Albany or Rochester or Salt Lake City.
Peter, I want to ask talk a little bit about county governments, actually. In the U.S., the local landscape looks very different on a state-by-state basis. And, you know, for example, the role of county governments varies dramatically. Do you think this is simply a difference of culture? Some states like towns, others are fond of big counties. Or do you think that some states really do a better job of arranging for the delivery of municipal services?
Well, I definitely believe some states do a better job than others. And I think New York is not one of the premier states. Now, as far as county government, I think, as a general rule, county governments are useless. I think that the ideal, I mean, almost all local services are better delivered by urban localities, towns, villages, boroughs, whatever you want to call them. That counties are not small enough to be responsive in the way that Wendell talked about knowing his own legislator, and they're not large enough to be efficient. In fact, what happens, because counties start suffering from the same thing that large cities do. I live in Nassau County. Nassau County has, for all of the countywide services, the highest public employee salaries in the country. Higher, believe it or not, than New York City. The highest paid police officers, the highest paid social welfare employees, the highest paid community college faculty, because the counties have, like I said, all the negative qualities of large cities, again, being subject to interest groups and especially public sector unions, without having the benefit of real small localities of understanding the needs of their various citizens. So if I could, at the stroke of a pen, abolish county government, I would. Connecticut, where I think Steve lives, has counties that are mapped designations, but they have no functional powers. And I think that's the way to go.
Wendell, which states do you think get it better with terms of delivering local services?
Boy, you know, I'm sorry to say I really haven't thought much about that. I guess you caught me without an answer.
All right. Well, how about fiscal distress? Fiscal distress is a ongoing preoccupation of public sector inks and the Manhattan Institutes because so many local governments continue to struggle. With regard to state government's role in preventing municipal distress, do you think that states should give more or less fiscal autonomy to local governments? And that goes for either taxation or spending.
Well, my view would be generally you want to give as much as is reasonable, but you need to have some limits. You need to have some, you know, debt limits and those kinds of things. And you need to have a program to identify when things are going wrong. I mean, we've got some marvelous examples in this country of fiscal distress programs. The state of Pennsylvania's Act 47 fiscal distress program. I just did some work in Ohio and was very much impressed by the work that they've done with their fiscal distress program. Both of those programs essentially grew out of difficulties in Pennsylvania. I think it was the city of Philadelphia and before Mayor Rendell, and of course it was the Cleveland bankruptcy in Ohio. Even in Michigan, you have something of a fiscal distress program with the emergency manager kind of thing. And I do think it's important at some point for the state to be prepared to jump in. It looks to me like in Detroit, they probably jumped in about 20 years too late, but that's another matter.
Well, I think that the states do both too much and too little. I think that we should be grateful that the states provide some kind of a check on the fiscal irresponsibility of the cities. That's certainly true of New York, and it's true of Philadelphia, and now belatedly of Detroit. So I actually look to the state to prevent large localities from going off the deep end. On the other hand, small localities suffer from a lot of state mandates that are unfunded. For example, the school districts in Long Island, their teachers' contracts can establish the pay, the current annual pay of the teachers, but they have no control whatsoever over the health benefits or the pension benefits of the teachers because those are mandated by the state. And so imposed on these localities are enormous costs. It's getting to the point now where in a typical Long Island school district where I live, the cost of former employees exceeds the cost of the current employees, mainly because of state pension and health care, health benefit mandates.
Wendell, urbanists are fond of noting that if you look at the most successful cities over the recent decades, all of them have been very active with respect to municipal annexation, even though in large cities on the East Coast, annexation hasn't been much discussed very recently. Do you see any possibility that annexation is going to be coming back in American cities? And do you think it would be a good thing if we started talking about merging?
Well, I'll give the answer away in my, thank God, no, I see not even the slightest possibility of that, because thank God, most of these cities, like the city of New York and most other cities, large cities in the country, are completely surrounded by municipalities that have no interest whatsoever in becoming a part of the larger city. I suspect where Professor Salins lived, that if you had a municipality on the border of Queens, they would certainly not be terribly inclined to want to combine with New York City. No, I think I certainly do not agree at all that annexation makes successful cities, unless you want to suggest that mere population increase creates more successful cities, which I think, by the way, was part of a pretty much invalid thesis by David Rusk and others, a couple of decades ago. The fact is that the fact that Charlotte, for example, has been able to annex willy-nilly for years doesn't prove that Charlotte is more successful than other cities, because we don't know how successful the places that they annexed would have been if they had not been annexed.
And what about kind of softer annexation, regionalization, just like service sharing agreements?
Well, I think the key is you allow that stuff to happen. You do not put on any requirements that make it permanent. I think, most states have joint powers agreement kinds of authority that allow cities and other governments to make agreements with other governments to share services. But no government, in my view, should ever enter into an agreement that doesn't have an end, because those things don't always work out.
I totally agree with Wendell. In fact, I had a grant from the New York Department of State a few years ago to look at exactly this issue, the ideal structure of government in localities. And I looked at the regionalizations that occurred in the last 20 years. None of them have proven to be especially effective or beneficial. I looked at the hundreds of jurisdictions in Long Island, and I saw no particular benefit in arbitrarily merging them. If we're going to have a realistic discussion on the issue, the question is, what can we do at this point that might make a difference? I think annexation is off the table. I think Wendell is absolutely right. Nor should it be on the table. Even if we could push a magic button and make it happen, I don't think we'd be happy with the results. What we can do is to disaggregate local government within the large cities. And I've advocated that for a long time. We've made sort of partial stabs at it in New York, but never very effectively. We do have community districts in New York City, but they don't have a lot of power. I've argued for years that we should break up the large cities for conventional municipal services. The people that know best how to deal with snow plowing and street paving and park maintenance are the people in the locality. If we didn't have such fraught issues as the huge disparities in educational achievement within the city, I think the schools should be disaggregated. I think that a school district of 1 million or more students is not viable, or even the 300,000 or so students that you have in L.A., I think schools function better in smaller municipalities where you have maybe 15, 20, 25, 30,000 students at the most, not hundreds of thousands. So I think at this point, rather than talking about annexation or even consolidation in the suburbs, which the suburbs bitterly resist. It comes up all the time in Long Island and is never popular. What we could do, and which might be politically popular, is to disaggregate government within the large cities. There, I think we have the political winds blowing in our direction. I think the locals within Los Angeles or Chicago or Boston or New York would be happy to gain more control over their local services. And that, I think, is both politically viable and beneficial. It'll be opposed by the public sector unions, might be opposed by others that gain a benefit from citywide politics. But I think as far as the residents of these communities, I think they would support that.
Well, we're almost out of time, but Wendell, do you want to have any last thoughts about the, well, the prospects
for disaggregation?
Well,
let me tell you, I mean, I've been agreeing with Professor Salins all through the program, but I couldn't agree more with what he's just suggested. I think the only thing one has to be aware of with respect to moving in that direction, and I think it's a marvelous direction to move, is to recognize that the only way you can do it is essentially, I think anyway, at the state level. That is, we saw, for example, huge, we've seen big consolidations in Canada in the last 30 or 40 years. And in Winnipeg, for example, they went out of their way to sort of mandate that there would be these local districts that would have power. Well, it was all gone by 5 years. And so the commitment needs to come perhaps from state law or even constitutional change that basically would require some form of devolution within a place like the city of New York. I don't know if we want to go to actually break the city of New York into municipalities. We may, but we might want to leave the city of New York around for some things and have sort of neighborhood, and neighborhoods might be 50, 100,000, 200,000 people that are responsible for other things. But you can't leave that at the arbitrary under the arbitrary control of the city and the city administration.
By the way, we have a absolutely perfect model of a place that functions exactly this way. The city happens to have an identical population to the city of New York. The place is called London.
Right.
And London, actually, the so-called boroughs, their boroughs are not like our Queens and Brooklyn and the Bronx. Their boroughs are essentially localities. They're quite small, and most services, the ordinary municipal services in the larger entity that we consider the city of London, but it's not a city, it's a region essentially, that those services are delivered by these boroughs. Rather belatedly, they created a kind of a semi-regional governmental entity that, I think it's called the Greater London Council or something like that, that covers all of this area. But for most of its history, London has been governed locality by locality, and quite effectively, from what I gather.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with you.
All right. Well, I bet we could find some people on Staten Island who agree about this talk.
I believe it.
But that's all the time we have for now. Thanks so much, guys, for taking the time to talk to Public Sector Inc.